The future of cricket is here. Today with us, we have Stuart Giles, President CEO of Century Cricket and decorated schoolboy, Aussie schoolboy cricketer. Welcome. Welcome to That's Cricket. We're going to talk about the future of cricket and your incredible new company, Century Cricket, and the technology you're bringing here to New York. Welcome.
Oh, cheers, Adam. Great to be here. And decorated Australian schoolboy cricketer. How's that for an
intro? So. Decorated Australian schoolboy cricketer, yes.
That's better than president and CEO.
I'll take that. Come with a little story?
Carries me a little bit forward. I mean, as you can tell, I've done a few laps of the block, right? I grew up playing my cricket back in a day before probably pathways and academies and identification. I think the Victorian schoolboy side that I was captain of was probably picked by a group of teachers sitting around in milk crates at the end of the carnival saying, thank God that's over and we can get all these kids off our hands. But somehow when they'd finished their slab of beer, my name was at the top of the list and that made me the captain. And somewhere down the list, they managed to put SK Warn. So it's carried me this far to say that at least I've always been able to say that, I threw the ball to Warnie before lunch and he got five for on debut for Victorian schoolboys. And the rest of his career followed a trajectory that left, nearly everybody behind, so I didn't have to feel as I headed off to my healthcare career, I didn't have to feel too bad about the fact that I weren't going to be Australia's next spinning superstar.
So. There you go.
You might not be Shane Warne's influence, but some of the stuff we're going to talk about is you're going to make you an influence in cricket.
Yes.
So it's nice that's like a full circle. You're going to come back and be involved in cricket and grow it with obviously the systems you're going to put in place, which is very exciting.
Yes. So yes, we want to talk about the future of cricket, the technology that you're building with Century Cricket. Give everyone at home an overview of what you're doing and the tech you have and what you've got set up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as I mentioned, my actual background and career had been in healthcare. Came to the end of that sort of journey, sat down and started to think about, where to next, what would like to be involved in. And someone actually literally put it to me that cricket was one of the few sports, despite all the statistics and all the data that it produces, that really hadn't found a way to embrace technology, AI, sort of, the movement towards simulation technologies that we'd seen enormously in golf, and we'd certainly seen it in other sports. So, we started to think through that a little bit more. We'd been tracking the trajectory of cricket in the US with a lot of interest. I made an investment in Major League Cricket when it first launched. And the more we looked at it, the more we thought that there was such a wonderful opportunity here in the US to participate in this real emergence of the game. And, I think everybody now knows the narrative, a T20 World Cup into an Olympics, into hopefully, a real moment for the game to sort of, establish itself for the long term here. And in the end, we've been super excited. We have official opening of our first centre in Houston at the end of last month, and here now ready to make Manhattan the centre of the Century Cricket world.
Love it. So, and basically in the kind of a nutshell version of what you're doing, it's a cricket simulator, bowling setup. So you're able to see the bowler running in, big LCD screen, ball shoots out. You can put in how you want the ball to come out. You're going to get that live feedback on where the ball went, how you hit the ball, and even capabilities of being able to stream yourself inside of the facility, correct?
Yeah, I think it's got all of those things. So, I mean, it is a fully simulated performance environment. So this is not an entertainment product. This is somewhere to actually go play the game properly and get better at the game you're playing. So to that end, as you say, full LED screen, polycarbonated screen, which was the big challenge to solve, actually. Most simulators work off rear projector technology. Great for a golf simulator because the only thing you really want to be able to see is the ball at your feet.
Yeah.
Anyone, your mates, everyone sits around, it's dark, so the golf hole looks fantastic. You got someone, got a bowling machine simulating, an in-swinging Yorker at 140 km an hour. You do not want, darkness is not your friend, right? But LED screens have solved that challenge for us. So it's an incredible visual experience. And then, as you say, you can preset the machines to face any series of bowling if you want. If you want to just look good at your cover drive, then just set it pitched up outside off stump and, away you go. But if you really want to test yourself, you could simulate last four overs of a T20 match. You can obviously, you can, as you said, then you get all the data immediately after play. You get a 4-second replay. It's got ball tracking. you get a simulated outcome. You know, did you squeeze it away for, you know, for 2-4 to square leg, or did you whack it over, you know, over mid wicket for 6?
Yeah.
So it's fantastic.
From my side, what I like about it is you have a lot of facilities around the world, but this is more high performance. You can actually go in there and get better as a professional cricketer. I mean, I'd love to still work on my batting, still get up the order at 41 years old, but that's such a good thing about it. It is high performance facility. Another good thing I love about it also, it is like a talent ID. If you have these facilities around the world, and obviously it's getting tracked, it's getting measured, you could have a kid who goes in there who's 13 years old and faces the equivalent of Pat Cummins, and he hits 65% of the ball out the middle of his bat. And now we've got a serious cricketer on our hands. And that's such a good, like that scouting part of it is such a huge part, which is amazing.
I think so. And I think that's, you know, we talked about the start here, the future of cricket. You know, I think at the moment, you know, if you look at it, and I said I've had some involvement in some league ownerships in Australia and here in the US, we're in this proliferation phase. You know, every day you wake up, there's a new league, there's a new location, but that doesn't last forever. Eventually, as we're starting to see with, you know, the IPL, IPL ownership into Major League Cricket in the US, the recent 100 auction, what may or may not happen in Australia with Big Bash, we're going to come out of proliferation into a consolidation of major owners and sort of, you know, global cricket activity. At that point, the actual value proposition moves from licenses and broadcast into talent. You look at a mature model like, you know, Premier League soccer or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the value is in players and transfer fees, and then the attention turns to talent identification. And I think our ability here, as you say, if we could have, you know, if every 13 to 16-year-old who was serious about their cricket in the US, mm-hmm. if you had a benchmark data of them facing the same 60 balls, that's when you'll find that kid in, you know, in Minnesota who's the outlier.
Yeah.
And so this is the 13 or 14-year-old. You know, we saw it in the IPL this year with the Rajasthan Royals. You know,
yes.
We will start to see breakout players at that age, and the marketability and eventually the value of that player will be that, you know, they'll be a phenom, and then that's when you sell. You know, you look at the 17 to 21-year-old transfer market in those sort of areas. So I think the talent identification, mm-hmm. if you ask me, what's the most exciting thing about what we're doing? You know, I think, you know, the shortlist certainly includes talent identification.
Yeah.
Well, I've been here for 4 years now, and a part of my role is to be like a talent, look after talent, manage the talent. But it's quite hard because obviously America's a big place, the facilities are not there. So that, in terms of having something like that, is key. Firstly, where's the cricketers? Who are the cricketers? Where are the cricketers? Another thing that excites me about that, which every kid wants to do now, well, every adult, is gamify. It's like you can go into the facility and you can practice on level one, and you have to be a certain level to get level two, level three, level four. That's going to drive people in. Also, a question we touched on it a little bit is, it's probably an easy answer. Obviously, we're growing cricket in America, and especially in New York now with the podcast and Cricket Impact Group. Why is New York so appealing to Century Cricket?
Yeah, look, I think it's the starting proposition probably is one level up. Why was the US and North America so appealing? And one of the areas for us was that, you know, one of the things you get with a simulator environment is consistency. You know, every centre can deliver, you know, the bowling machines can, you can be sure you're facing the same bowling, you're doing the same outcomes, which when you're trying to grow the game in a market like the US, it's the lack of consistency of the experience. You know, an old bowling machine at the back end of a baseball batting cage is not going to really make anyone better.
Right.
And particularly someone, not just someone already connected to the game, but, you know, someone who might be, you know, if the final frontier is here is, you know, Americans, and Americans who might fall in love with the game and want to get better, you've got to give them an environment where, you know, the variable isn't could they find someone to bowl to them, mm. or could they find a bowling machine or a facility. Yeah. You know, if you want to practice and practice and get better and better, then I think that's the first step to it. Then you move into the, okay, well, why putting the biggest flag that we can down in Manhattan? First step is there's actually not a single cricket centre.
Correct, yeah.
Here.
Yep.
So, you know, the first piece is that is a challenge. That's a challenge if you put your Australian hat on, our very best player and probably the key to our Ashes success spends 6 months of the year in New York, mm-hmm. with nowhere that he can train or get better. Now, at the moment, you know, he finds a way for Steve Smith to make that work because he's Steve Smith.
He plays under the bridge. What are you talking about?
Exactly. He goes and does a fitness test with someone filming it on a mobile phone under the West Side Highway at 35 degrees, right?
The worst thing about that, he'll probably just go runs from that anyway.
Well, it's because he's Steve Smith, right?
Yeah.
But even you think about Steve, you know, he wants to reinvent himself as a power hitter post this Ashes series to play in the Olympics, you know, in 28. You know, not only does he need somewhere to work on that part, it becomes a fascinating journey for the rest of the cricket world to follow, which doubles back to one of sort of Adam's references earlier. You know, not only is this a place where you can go work on your cricket, get immediate information, feedback and get better, the capability is for you to actually share that experience with the world.
Yeah.
Now, that may only be, you know, it might be, you know, dad at work who wants to see how you're going at training when he can't get there. It might be, you know, grandma or grandpa living in another country and wanting to follow on and feel part of your life. Or it could be Steve Smith with 4 million Instagram followers, you know, who really do want to follow this journey of, you know, how does a guy base himself in Manhattan and continue to be the best in the world.
Yeah, something that I'm super thankful for that you're bringing this here, because, like, even for me as, you know, amateur cricketer, cricket super fan, like, I have no accessibility to play any cricket. I have to go to a baseball batting cage and just hit full tosses. And for the cricket market here, which is so big, thousands of people play cricket here in New England and in New York, for this to be somewhere for us to come and play and practice cricket is just, it's so big. And I'm so thankful that you're doing it, because, like, cricket's so important to me, and it's going to be, you're going to be touching a lot of lives and helping a lot of people, you know, play cricket here in the area.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we get it right, Adam, you'll be able to get down there, work on your game, improve, have an epiphany, go back to school, and then you might find yourself as a decorated Australian schoolboy cricketer. So, but I think some of those things you touched on in more seriously, you know, the participation numbers across the US are huge, right?
Yes,
the existing market of cricket interest. I mean, you look at some of the things, you arrive in Boston and you do an inquiry about, can I play cricket here? And you discover that there's, you know, a 13-team league with five teams each. Each club's got five teams. You know?
Yeah.
If you've happened to find yourself in Toronto for work instead, you know, there's a 50-team competition with a 50-team wait list. And that's one of the things that we really saw was that, US counties aren't going to find the funding and the capability to build outdoor cricket infrastructure. Yep. Grounds are expensive to build. They're very expensive to maintain. The further north you go, the less of the year that, you know, the climate is cricket conducive. Therefore, you know, the market opportunity to put, you know, an indoor centre in place, you know, it's a lot easier to find, I'm still talking to Australian, 1,000 square metres, but, you know, let's, you know, try and find, you know, 10 to 15,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And make it, you know, fully, you know, 365 days a year, 24/7.
Yeah.
Cricket usable.
Yeah.
Is really doable.
I think also as well, it's the education for the groundsman to look after the pitches. For me right now, you don't have that here. So I'd rather have the best indoor facilities rather than a half-assed outdoor facility, you know, and that's kind of the case here on the East Coast with the weather. You want to have the best facilities indoor where you can improve. I feel the outdoor facilities right now is going to take a while to get there.
I think, and particularly this next, the generations that we're seeing coming through now as athletes in nearly any sport actually do show you can develop almost all of your necessary skills in a simulated environment. Hmm. If you can make that simulated environment effective for all of the inputs that you get, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, and hence that's why, you know, we've worked really hard on the technology side. We've had essentially a technology lab in Bangalore for the last 12 months, building it up to the point where, you know, we felt comfortable that putting that first that membership induction through in Houston, that they were really going to feel like they were playing cricket.
Yes.
It had to be a hard ball. You know, most of the products that have been out there have been either a soft ball or a hybrid ball, so it really doesn't bring you all the elements of batting performance.
Yeah.
We also do have bowling and wicket keeping capability inside the centres, but we do find, you know, it's a batsman's game. About 80% of simulator use is still batting, even on load management, and there are so many things that influence that.
Yeah.
But
where do you see Century Cricket going? Do you see it obviously developing across America, across North America, having different sites and being accessible to millions of people?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think I'm fascinated about, we made a decision to, I guess, in some ways, climb the diving board and do a triple somersault with a reverse pike first up. We decided to take, an Australian business with an Indian technology partner and let's launch in the US, right? Mm. But there was, and hopefully a real method to the madness. Mm. The first is some of those unique features we've talked about, the US market and then Manhattan in particular, that made it a really logical way to put our foot on the ground about here's what we're doing, and it's not just a cricket product for cricketers in cricketing, established cricketing markets. Unequivocally, we see it as a global product. We said we sort of, if you think about the three tiers of what we're actually building, there's this membership centre performance element where you can get better regardless if you love cricket and you want to get better, or you want to get better because you see it as a vocational opportunity. But on the side of it, there's the community piece around Strava for cricket, and that requires a distributed network, So yes, we see a rollout across the US, probably led initially by where the participation numbers and the sort of, I guess, the cricket communities are currently located. But I think for that to happen, it also needs to happen in sync with global activity. So, we'll be, the Bangalore Tech Lab will be coming, we'll be transferring, going actually across the other side of the river and becoming and we're currently in an agriculture and sports environment where you can't run commercially, but it's been brilliant for being, from a tech lab development view. But I think, that ability, even I think when we hopefully all, stream Steve's opening session here in Manhattan, we'd expect that's in sync with the same sort of activity being underway, in India, in Australia, probably beyond that, hopefully around sort of, in other global locations. Huge amount of interest out of the Middle East, where it's the reverse climactic driver. Obviously, it's a lot of the year it's too hot to play outside. Yeah. But the same thing, that consistency of environment and the input of information is really, I think, what's going to give it that globalized opportunity.
You talk about people on TikTok and OnlyFans. OnlyFans was originally for like chefs and artists. I think you mentioned that to me previous, but it's also in terms of Steve Smith and you get other professional cricketers, it's also a way of earning money through streaming, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we're really starting to peel back the onion on is, we're looking at a model where a player has a chance to essentially end up being paid to train or leverage the rest of their activity. I think we saw, we've had one cricketer attempt to put an OnlyFans sticker on his bat in a major tournament, and it probably didn't. And I think a Century Cricket streaming app's probably going to be more appealing to.
I don't think he showed enough feet. He didn't show enough flesh on it.
But I think, but you're exactly right. I think if you look at the current commercial environment that we're living in, whether it be an OnlyFans environment, Twitch for gaming, John Boy Media, right? We're actually living in an eyeballs era, right? It's, can you present something that people are interested in and want to watch? And in some ways, I feel like we're actually, we have a chance here to peel back the curtains on a part of the cricketers' world that we've never really seen before. I mean, you've been on tour. You know that people turn off and hang off the edge of the nets for the chance to see how do you train before a test match? How are you preparing?
Even now during the Ashes, all the coverage is a meteor guy with a camera, 100 meters away, trying to zoom in, trying to get the look at the current Ashes batting. That we're trying to get there. Look at them, and to have the ability to watch your plays. I mean, cricketers, cricket fans, they're going to be dialed in.
I mean, you think about it retrospectively. Wouldn't it be fascinating to have had a chance to have seen what Marnus has done in this off season?
Oh, yeah.
To have returned back, leading into the Ashes, but certainly domestic cricket, Marnus has looked like the best version of Marnus that we've seen in 5 years.
Yes.
Right. Imagine having had the chance to have watched Marnus, heard from Marnus as he's been training, turning up and actually sharing with, I've decided I've either I'm looking to get back to this or I'm doing that. So I think that, that ability, because, in the end, they're definitely in the entertainment game. The more you can connect, and that's, I mean, there's almost nothing we don't know about the lives of a Formula One driver.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, right? Yeah, yeah. You know, it hasn't just been this drive to survive one-off phenomenon, right? And if you think about most of the fan engagement at an F1 rusted on level is actually because they can drive a simulator. You can see what you'd be like.
Yeah, you know.
So I think nearly in every other sport, you can find the simulator moment that gives you the connection. And I think that hopefully we're part of, you know, doing that for cricket.
Perfect. Stuart, well, I thank you so much for being here. Before you go, we are going to get your Ashes prediction. How do you see it going?
I think it's going to go – I still feel 3-1 Australia. Okay. It's probably said with more hope than conviction. I think the most interesting thing about this Ashes series in its build-up has probably been the trials and tribulations of both nations' attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think
hamstring horror.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's an interesting consequence, I think, of what we've seen with, you know, the, you know, bowlers are getting older.
Yeah, yes.
By definition, I mean, you know, to my left. But if you think about, certainly in Australia, we've watched this magnificent quartet of bowlers.
Yes.
But we've watched them and we've watched them and we've watched them. You know, Test cricket as a bowler is hard. It's actually one of the hardest things in sport, right? Yeah. And to keep climbing up that mountain, you know, for longer and longer, you know, I think there was always going to be, you know, a potential moment of reckoning. It probably looks like for Australia, it's arriving at maybe the worst possible time. I mean, yes. You know, that's, I mean, two of the four now in serious doubts for serious elements of this series. You know, Nathan on the way, you know, back from an Ashes perspective from a quite, you know, debilitating injury, you know, in the last series. So, you know, I think that, you know, that, you know, if ever Joe was going to have a chance to change the narrative around, you know, his performance on Australian soil,
it's now.
I'm disappointed in the fact because you want to see the best players play. Like, that's the disappointing thing about this. You want to see Cummins play. You want to see him open the ball in or Hazelwood. You want to see that, right? You want to see the best versus the best. And it's obviously sad when you see injuries to Australia. I'm obviously English. I want England to win, but I'd rather England win playing against the best Australian team. So that's kind of where my thoughts are.
I feel like that's one of the things is that I feel like Boland coming in, he's also a quality player. Because you've got to feel like the four as they are, if 1 year from now, you'd almost expect them not to be in the side. You know, you'd probably think there's retirements are coming for, you know, from Khawaja, from Lyon, from Stark, from Hazelwood. Cummins probably stay a little bit longer in his career, but the team is going to completely rotate over the next 2 years into the new age of young players. And you got, you know, Neeser and Doggett and Boland will be that next frontier lineup.
I'm excited as an England batsman if that's the lineup. It's hard, isn't it? Because you go from Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins. It's like once in a generation, a bit like McGrath, Warne, Gillespie.
Yes.
And it comes and you have these group of players who are successful, so many overs under the belt, so much experience, so many wickets. Obviously, Nathan Lyon's a massive part of that. And if you start pulling it apart a little bit, all the pieces don't link up properly.
Yeah.
But that's cricket. It goes around in cycles,
that's
right?
Cricket.
So that's cricket.
That's cricket.
I think that's right, and I think that's, in some ways as well now, that's the beauty of sport, right?
Yeah.
You know, as you say, we're certainly not getting a predictable script now, you know, and I think that'll be, you know, when the history of this Ashes series is written and reviewed now, it's going to be who did handle the enforced change better, who was readier than we might have thought to step up. You know, I think the bowling piece is fascinating because at the end of the day, you know, it's still another bowler with a lot of bowling on the clock, which could be advantageous because if you still actually get experience and comfort at the level. But it's certainly not, he's not the generational leader coming through to be the centrepiece of that attack,
right?
You know, for Ashes series you know, going forward. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's going to be fantastic to watch whether you're sitting up here in the That's Cricket comfy chairs.
We'll be sitting up here in the comfy chairs in the
last. We'll be here.
Where will you be tuning in from? Where will you be the Ashes?
Yeah, so I'll be hoping to get to the majority of the tests.
That works well, actually, because we might FaceTime you in.
FaceTime?
Yeah, no, happy to be the man on the ground.
On the ground, right here.
Counting on me, day one at the Gabba, sure. I think, you know, it, as a...
this little guy.
Day night pink ball action.
Well, I mean, I think... it has a fair history, day one, and even ball one at the Gabba. So maybe we, if we can get me online for ball one, you know, if England are batting, then we'll clearly, well, if England are batting, we unequivocally will be hoping for our Mitchell Stark moment. If England are bowling, I mean you were probably there in the dugout when Steve Harmison just caught the edge of the wicket.
I mean, that was the thing. I think we're going to get Harmy on the show, but I mean, for the viewers who obviously don't know cricket, the first ball of the Ashes, was it the first ball of the series?
We'll definitely throw it in.
His first ball, it looked like he got someone out, but he bowled that wide. It was
slip.
I was in the dugout and I went to celebrate and I realised, okay.
Love it. So, Stuart, thanks for being on. You're going to give us a sign off on which look down the barrel, which I know which one. Look down the barrel and give us a. Just give me a that's cricket. Right in here. Give me a that's cricket.
That's cricket.